Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
On today's episode, it's movies, TV, you and me. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I have some thoughts that I want to share with you here on Big Squid. Welcome to the podcast. This was an opportunity for me to sit down and talk to you about some of the movies that I have seen recently and a TV show that maybe has flown under the radar. It seems to have flown under the radar. I only know a couple of people who have been watching this and yeah, it's interesting. I think it's probably because not a lot of people have Amazon Prime. You know, you probably have Netflix and things like that. Maybe, what would be the second one? Would it be Foxtel? Would that be the second biggest one? Or would it be Stan? I'm not sure, actually. But this is on Prime. It's the TV series Mr. and Mrs. Smith. We'll be discussing that. I'm also going to give a little recommendation to the Mubi app, M-U-B-I, Mubi, which is, I think, pretty underrated. You can see lots of great alternative and foreign films there. I'll do a little shout out for that as well. But first, I wanted to start off by talking movies with you. Let's start with the big one, Dune 2. It is a sequel to Dune 1. Do you call it Dune 1? It's just Dune, isn't it? And then it's Dune 2. And then I guess it'll be Dune Messiah if it follows the books. Dune Part 2, it's not Part 1. Is it Part 1? Anyway, I've already derailed myself. Their new film has been out for a little while, and I was originally going to record a podcast straight after I'd seen it, but I felt like I should give you all enough time to go and check it out. Sometimes you can be a bit too soon with this kind of stuff, I think. The new film, once again, directed by Denis Villeneuve and co-written by him with John Spates, based on the Frank Herbert novels. And it pretty much picks up following Paul Atreides as he is trying to find his way with the Fremen, along with his crazy-ass mother. And not only is he trying to stay alive, which seems to be something that is a prerequisite at this point in his life, he's also trying to become one with a different culture. He's trying to hold on to his old beliefs, his theories on what it is to be a good person. And it's the whole time he's battling what people want of him, what people believe he should be, and these weird-ass dreams that keep invading his subconscious and pushing him and pulling him in all sorts of different directions. Once again, the movie is stunning to look at. It is a sight to behold. The cinematography by Greg Fraser is phenomenal. It's by the way, it's written G-R-E-I-G. Is that Greg? Greg Fraser? Greg. Oh, let's just go with Greg, because Greg sounds like I have a stroke in the middle of saying Greg. Anyway, this follows Paul as he becomes one with this different culture and meanwhile learns terrible secrets about his upbringing and meanwhile has to deal with the villains of the story, the Harkonnens, and what they are trying to do not only to him but also to the galaxy. It also brings in new characters. There is the Padishah Emperor of the Known Universe, Shaddam IV, as played by Christopher Walken. Great. What a beautiful face to see up on the big screen. It is so stunning. He was such a beautiful young man, and as he's gotten older, his face has age and wisdom and experience, but those eyes are still stunning. And to see them on the big screen was just breathtaking, I thought. This is a phenomenal sequel, you know. It's interesting because it picks up pretty much straight after the first one, which took me by surprise. I thought there would be some time in between them. And then it kind of moves along, like the first half of the movie is we're just putting this over here and we're just putting this over there, and it's just kind of taking its time and everything is able to breathe. And, you know, we see the relationship between Zendaya's character and Chalamet as they kind of are pushing against each other and then getting to know each other, and then through getting to know each other finding an intersection of interests and beliefs. Zendaya is absolutely fantastic in this movie. If you haven't seen it already, or you have seen it and you hadn't noticed this and you plan on watching it again, keep an eye on the way she listens to the characters when they're talking to her. I know that seems like a weird thing to point out, but when she's listening, there is not one part of her face that looks like she's drifting off thinking about what her next line is going to be. Like, she just bores into people. She stares into their souls. And it's rare that when a character is talking, you can't take your eyes off the person listening. But Zendaya, this might be like one of those compliments that sounds weird, but I think she's one of the great listeners in cinema at the moment. There's a lot of actors who, you know, even the good actors feel like they're just waiting for the other actor to stop talking. But she is in the moment, you know. She is there. She is hearing those words for the first time, and we know that there are obviously never just one take. So that's why that really stood out to me. Chalamet is fantastic as Paul. I've seen a little bit of discourse about Chalamet, like, not being physically imposing enough for the role, or, you know, do you get to the end and really think this guy could be a leader? But that's kind of the point, right? Like, kind of the point is he is not that archetype, and you do wonder if he should be doing what he's doing. You don't even know if he is doing his actions are correct for the right reasons. You know, he starts off with a very set idea on how he should do things, and then as the movie progresses and he starts to learn more lessons about not just the people around him, you know, especially with his mum and, you know, the Bene Gesserit and the way they have been manipulating things, but also the discovery in his lineage. It's quite fascinating to see as he kind of gets pushed over here and then pulled over here, and he's told this and you should do that and you should do this and you should do that. And it makes sense to me that when he's now the leader, he's the one in charge. He kind of does a lot of right things to get to that position, but you still aren't quite certain that he should be in that position. It's funny, like you watch this film and you suddenly realize, well, not suddenly, but you know, you've always known the effect that, or the influence that this set of books had on Star Wars, to the extent, like, even as a kid, I didn't really understand why Han Solo was a spice runner. Do you know what I mean? Like, as a kid, I was like, what, is it against the law to sell coriander? That seems like a weird thing. And then, you know, so you can see the DNA in Star Wars that's come from Dune. And, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's like Star Wars was influenced in many ways by Dune, and we kind of had this idea of Luke Skywalker. Like, Luke Skywalker is very much that whiny kid who I loved as a kid. But, you know, as you get older and you rewatch Star Wars and he's telling these X-Wing fighters how easy it is to shoot shit, and you're like, shut up, mate. Come on, Luke. No, your time to talk, mate. You know? I feel like he's been a bad example for a lot of young people. Sit back. Let someone else talk for a second. Excuse me, my throat is a bit dry. It's so hot in my apartment at the moment. And anyone who might read my blogs, the Dispatches from the Fury Road, which you can find at bigsquidpod.com, a couple of weeks ago, my beautiful expensive fan fell apart. And you know what? It has been really difficult to find a decent fan to buy. Yeah. There you go. There's a little tangent that you probably didn't need. Anyway, so, you know, you see Luke Skywalker and he's kind of got this Paul Atreides thing going. And, yeah, it makes you lament the lack of cohesive vision for the 7th, 8th and 9th Star Wars movies. Regardless of how you feel about each one of them, you know, you might love the original J.J. Abrams one, and then you might love everything that happens in The Last Jedi, but we can agree that there is no singular vision, and it really suffers for that, and it's because they don't really know what to do with some of these characters. And what we have here in these two films, at least, we do have a singular vision. We do have an absolute idea, whether you want that idea or not, and especially if you're a fan of the books. I've never read the book, so I'm only going by the David Lynch film, which I know is bonkers, and maybe, look, it doesn't work, but it still has some great stuff in it. And you know, they've made some decisions in this, so Chalamet not necessarily emboldening what we expect a great leader to be is perfect, I think. And I think he's perfect in the role. So I was a big fan of all of that. Rebecca Ferguson as Lady Jessica. Whew, Rebecca Ferguson. She has, over a short amount of time, really catapulted to the top of my favourite actors. I just think she is mesmerising. She just has a charisma that oozes out of her. And I think one of the major, major mistakes of the last Mission Impossible film was how they treated that character, in case you haven't seen it. But, and I heard some people being a bit derisive about that, but I was like, no, you're the ones missing the point. Like, to be completely honest with you, I find in the Mission Impossible films, all the ones that I've really enjoyed, it's kind of like a low-level franchise that I get right into and enjoy seeing on the big screen. But in many ways, Ethan Hunt is, for me, the least interesting character in the series, and Rebecca Ferguson in that is just out of control good from the first time you meet her. You're like, yep, more of her. She's great. Thank you very much. And she brings something completely different to this role, but it is steely. It is powerful, and she is pretty fantastic. I found the TV series Silo didn't quite have the momentum that it felt like it should have, and there was no way I wasn't going to watch any more of it because I love her so much. Let's get to some of the other actors who are in the movie. Stellan Skarsgård, great, just doing some of his best work. If anyone hasn't watched Andor, like, I watched The Mandalorian because I love Baby Yoda. Don't give a shit. I know he's got another name. He'll always be Baby Yoda to me. But that show really kind of started to lose my interest, and I just checked in for The Muppet. Star Wars as a whole, I haven't, you know, I think I got 15 minutes into Kenobi and just had to give up, even though I have a deep abiding love for Ewan McGregor. Other things I tried and was like, nah, I haven't even tried most of the stuff. I had Carl Donnelly staying here with me. He was watching Ahsoka. I watched some of it while he was watching it, but have not felt an urge to go back to it. Andor is amazing. Andor is by far my favorite part of the Star Wars canon since probably Empire, and Stellan Skarsgård in that is a very, very big reason for that hitting home for me. So he is, as always, wonderful. Charlotte Rampling as, man, the Bene Gesserit Reverend Mother. Whew, she is, yikes, great, just great. Dave Bautista is excellent in this. Doesn't quite get to do as much, but he's always an imposing figure. Once again, the opening of the Blade Runner sequel with him is quite stunning, and a little bit sad. And you know, if you don't have time to rewatch all that film, just go back and watch a start. Josh Brolin is great. There's nothing much more to say to that. Austin Butler comes in pitching 100. That's great. You know, his ability to mimic Stellan Skarsgård's voice is pretty phenomenal. Yeah, it's his mimicry. It's not mimicry, but you know, the ability to you know, copy the rhythms and the angles inside to the cadence of the voice is fantastic. Javier Bardem, though, is, you know, as a true believer, is just fantastic. Sometimes it veers on the side of it like he's in a different film, like he's suddenly channeling Omar Sharif, but I laughed every time that he was on. Not every time, but was when he was meant to be funny, he was 100% funny. The set pieces are fantastic. I think there was only one time that I was taken out of it with the special effects, and that's when it comes to crowds. I think CGI hasn't quite gotten there with crowds. It always feels a little bit video gamey for me, but that is, I need to stress, a minor quibble. This is a stunning film to watch. It's interesting. I think I was about to mention it at the start, but it feels like there's a different kind of pace for the first two-thirds of the film and then the last third. To be honest, I thought I maybe had, you know, blanked out for a second because suddenly it was just moving at such a rapid pace. And I found it that shift in velocity difficult to kind of come to terms with. Once I got on board with it, I was fine. But if you haven't seen it already, just be kind of aware that there's just going to be a moment where the action ratchets up and things happen quickly, and then you will have to kind of fill in some gaps in between the scenes to work out how the characters have arrived at certain places emotionally. So that isn't a criticism. That is just something that I noticed. I saw it at VMAX. I haven't had an opportunity to see it at IMAX, but I'm going to treat myself to that when I finish on this latest season of filming for Dancing with the Stars. Yes. Did you know that? Had I told you that? That I'm working on Dancing with the Stars? This is my third season. Yeah. It's kind of a fun job. I've had a good time working with Chris Brown. Working with another great comedy writer, Richard Thorpe. He's fantastic. Sonia is fun to work with. And some of the stars are really nice. One of them was giving me, I shouldn't tell you this, but You know what it's like on this podcast. As soon as I say I shouldn't tell you this, I'm going to tell you, so don't worry. One of the stars was giving me the evil eye because I was talking to their dancing partner. But I've known their partner for, like, we've made three seasons, I should say, of Dancing with the Stars. So I'm not saying that I'm friends with this dancer, but we've worked together. Like, we know each other to be able to have a chat, and we were talking about stuff. And I made her laugh, and she put her arm around me, and we were laughing, and there was nothing to it. She's a dancer. She's expressive. And then one of the stars was giving me the evil eye. And I thought that was fucking great. No, I'm not going to tell you who it is. When it comes out in July, email me. If you guess correct, I'll give you a gold star. I'll give you a thumbs up. Dear. There's such long hours. I'm doing such long hours. I've got to get my joy where I can, right? Anyway, Dune Part 2. Loved it. Thought it was great. If they're going to wait a while before they make a third one, great. I don't mind. Do whatever you have to do. Get to it when it's time to get to it, and I'll be ready to go. I'm going to try and see this at the IMAX ASAP and really, really lock in. But if you haven't seen it yet, and you were a fan of the first one, or maybe you watched the first one on TV, if you can, I know life is busy. I know going to the cinema can be expensive, but you'll be in for a real treat seeing it on the biggest screen that you can possibly see it. So, you know, there's no star rankings here. I just loved it and it was great. So go and have a good time if you can. Okay, the second film I wanted to talk to you about is a completely different experience. This is The Zone of Interest. And it is about the Nazi Commandant Rudolf Hess and his wife Hedwig. And it's about the two of them building a dream life for their family in a home that is right next to the infamous Auschwitz concentration camp. So we are going in completely different directions here with these movies. This is set in 1943. And this is one of the most fascinating cinema experiences I've had, right? So what happens is you're watching the film and it's kind of shot like a reality TV show. So there's cameras in every room. So you're watching the mundaneness of this family. They celebrate birthdays, they do the washing, you know, the kids stay up late at night, all sorts of things, right? But then if that's at the foreground of what you're watching on the screen, if you look beyond the foreground, even in these idyllic moments, you can see the chimneys, you can see the smoke, you can see that world. So you can see it. But then what's even more fascinating is if you listen, and I mean really listen, if you listen beyond the conversation that's taking place in front of you, if you listen beyond that, there's a whole other movie happening. And it ties in to what's happening in the background. Because through the audio, you can hear gunshots. You can hear people screaming.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You can hear the clatter and the clanging of machinery, and that's the sound of Auschwitz working. And what that does is it informs you of how, in a way, sometimes evil isn't, you know, twirling your moustache, you know, and saying evil things. Sometimes to be bad can be to not be present. Do you know what I mean? And to have all of this stuff going on behind you and to not be engaging with it is not only a terrible slap in the face for what we think of these things in history, but also you can use it as a metaphor for what's going on in the world today. Rudolf Hoss was a real man, and so this is like a fictionalized version of a real story. You know, he has people come over and talk about the work, and it's just like, you know, you have a few people over from work and they talk about things, but then you hear what they're talking about and it is evil shit. And the way they talk about it is the way you would say, hey, we're gonna buy the office space next door, and then we're going to spread out. Like, they talk with that sort of mundaneness. Like, mundane is the word that keeps coming back to me. And I think it would be very easy to see this film and think that not much happened. But that's not the case. There's so much going on at all times. And, you know, just simple things like Rudolf takes his two of his children out on a boat down the river, and they're having a good time, and the kids are playing in the water and he's fishing, and then he steps on something and he's, what's that? You know, and puts his hand into the water, and what he pulls out is horrifying. And then he realizes that there's ash on the water, and then he's quickly getting his kids in the boat, taking them home, scrubbing them. Oh, get that off them. Get that off them. Oh, what a terrible thing to have had happen. But then it kind of goes back to, you know, there's new clothes that the wife has and she wants to share them with, you know, some of the servants that handle the chores, etc. Ah, but where do they get those dresses from? And then you think about it and then you realize where those dresses came from and the way she just hands them out without a care, without thinking about where they came from, handing them to other people who would, if they weren't being servants, would be over in the camp. It's fascinating. Like, it is an absolutely fascinating film. There's little bits and pieces that sometimes films like the film will kind of close in on something and kind of almost grind to a halt before starting again. There's a little storyline that doesn't have too much to it, but it's about a Polish girl who sneaks out and hides food at the prisoners' work sites for them to find and eat. And then there is a moment at the end, which I don't want to give away, but there is a moment at the end that draws a through line from then to now. And it's almost like Rudolf Hoss is maybe coming to terms with his legacy until he manages to choke it down and not have to deal with it. Anyway, it is a fascinating film. I'm not going to tell you that it's an easy watch. It is not an easy watch, but I was riveted all the way through it. I was fascinated by a couple of dudes who turned up late, maybe. Like, it's hard to tell when you're right into a film what's going on, but it felt like about 10 minutes late, and they sat the row behind me but up to the left, so they weren't too close to me. And because the movie has such a specific sound design, I could hear this guy eating popcorn all the way through the film. Now, I need to point out, even though I could hear the popcorn, I was so riveted with the film, it wasn't taking me out of the movie in the sense that I was getting angry or anything like that. But there was a part of me that wanted to turn around and go, man, like, put the popcorn away for you. Like, there's just, you know how loud food sounds when you're eating it in your head. So don't. Are you paying attention? Because I'm guessing that you're crunching popcorn and you can't hear the depth of this audioscape, you know? Anyway, I didn't say anything because I was too wrapped with the film and I didn't want to brag it for me. But it was just it was one of those things that I realized was going on at the time, and then when I left, I was thinking about it afterwards and was quite fascinated that I just figured he would have missed stuff because there's just, what are you going to do? There's nothing you can do about that. Anyway, The Zone of Interest, it's still in the cinema. Also stars Sandra Hüller, who just was the lead in Anatomy of a Murder. So it's two films I've seen her in within a couple of weeks, and she's been fantastic in all of them. I'll tell you here and now, she is an arsehole in this film. She is an arsehole. But I say arsehole as a absolute compliment, because she is fantastic. Before we talk about Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I wanted to suggest to you, if you look, once again, things are expensive, and I completely understand that, you know, you can't be like me getting all of the apps and all of the sites, you know, so you've got a budget. But if you have a little bit of extra money, and you love movies, and you would like to see some different types of movies, Mubi, and this is not me getting any advertising money for this. God, I should have checked in before I started to make this suggestion. But Mubi has lots of really interesting films that are foreign, old, just a broad range that you won't find on the other apps. And recently I watched Orson Welles' The Magnificent Ambersons. I watched The House by the River, which is an old noir film, which is amazing. La Antena, which was from a few years ago, which is surreal. Silent, but everyone speaks in subtitles. Hard to explain, but when you see it, you would get it. And recently I watched Sofia Coppola's first short film, Lick the Star, which is like a 14 minute film. And if like me, you're a Sofia Coppola fan, it's a really interesting movie to watch and get a sense of you know, where she started and where she is now. So once again, completely understand that things are expensive and you can't be signing up for everything. But if you have a little bit of extra money, or you're thinking of maybe dropping one and you want to replace it with something, Mubi, M-U-B-I, has given me a lot of joy in the stuff that I've been able to finally see or discover, you know, stuff that I'd never heard of before, and then I finally got to see it. Okay, let's finish off with, once again, an Amazon Prime show, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. It is a TV series that is starring Donald Glover, who, you know, I've loved most of what Donald Glover has created, and I was a big fan of Atlanta in particular, and I thought Swarm was really interesting. Sometimes a hard watch, but really interesting. This is a TV show with Atlanta writer Francesca Sloan, who is the co-creator, and Maya Erskine is the female lead. And I had not seen anything of Maya before. I don't think I have. And it is great. It is inspired by the original movie that starred Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. And this takes everything in a slightly different direction. They are two people who are working for an agency, and they're brought together to live in a house, and they are given the code names Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and they are to, for the rest of the world who looks at them, they are a married couple, but they're assassins. So that's the premise. Now, originally, this was meant to be Donald Glover and Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and I was really excited because, as you know, I saw Fleabag live. I've banged on about that before, and it was really exciting. But then she ended up leaving for creative differences. And when this series first appeared on Amazon Prime, I don't know, I just kind of didn't get around to it. I just didn't get around to it. I can't really tell you why. I think I was just a bit bummed out that she wasn't involved anymore, because I was really curious to see what they would do together. And then I was like, well, I love him. And, you know, I love the creative team on Atlanta. So why don't I just get around to checking it out. And I have to say, I fucking loved it. I thought it was fantastic. It is 8 episodes. I don't know why they dropped all 8 episodes at once. I honestly don't think this is a binge series. This would have been perfect as a week to week. It has an overarching story, but each episode is its own thing. And even when I was watching it, I never watched, like, I didn't even watch 2 episodes 2 days in a row. I would watch 1 episode and I'd be happy to sit on it, you know, and then think about it and then eventually get to the next episode. So it's taken me a while to finally finish this, but I finished it this week and I just loved every episode. There are some great, absolutely great cameos. I'm not going to mention any of them. Please don't look them up. It's so much fun to just go, oh, shit, it's blah, blah, blah. That's part of the fun. The acting is really understated. There's nothing too big. The small moments feel real. And you know, we've talked about this for ages, where I will accept the highest, biggest, most outrageous premise, but you have to get the things that happen in everyday life, you have to get them right. You have to hit it in a way that if that's the bit I relate to, that's the bit that I need to see, and then I'll accept people flying through the air. I'll accept people who dress up as bats to fight crime. You know, I'll accept going through wormholes. I'll accept all of that, but I'll accept giant worms. I'll accept all of it, but you have to get the interactions that are like everyday life, you have to get them right. And this series gets it. Maya Erskine and Donald Glover together are magic. They're really funny together. And when each character laughs, like I've been talking about this with Adam Richard, it feels like they're really making each other laugh. Like, and that's really addictive to watch. There are episodes, like, each episode looks like it's worth about $10 million. It looks so expensive. There is an episode set in Italy. There are cameos galore. God, I do kind of want to discuss them, but maybe I'll come back to this and we can discuss everything properly. And I don't know if we'll get a second season, but it finishes in a way where you go, ah, okay. Well, if that's the last episode, you've left me, like, it fits in with the show, but I'd be bummed out. I definitely want another season because I want to know what happens from here. But I also kind of, you know, there's something. All right, how's this for a nerdy comparison for you? And very old school. But there's something a bit Blake 7 about the ending. There you go. For 99% of you, that is going to... I may as well have just made up words, but I think for 1% of you, you'll be like, ooh, dear. Anyway, just in case you were wondering if my nerd credentials were bona fide. Anyway, the chemistry between Glover and Erskine is fantastic. Donald Glover, like, he's looking like a little John David Washington at the moment. He is buff, and I was saying to Adam, and it's like, I watched all of Atlanta. I've seen him in other things. I was like, he is generating some real sex appeal in this film. And Adam said something about dilating, and I went, oh, yeah, okay, well, there we go. Yeah, it's definitely working. But he looks fantastic. Maya Erskine is so funny. She's vulnerable. She's just great. She's pretty hot as well, actually. But it's more in what they generate between each other that I think it really works. It's the action is amazing. The choreography of the action is great. The way it's directed is great. And I just loved it. And if you have Amazon Prime, or, you know, you want to do one of those little get it for a month quickly, you've got 4 weeks to watch 8 episodes, you know, that kind of thing. Well, I'd do it. Like, I'd honestly do it. It's really worthwhile. I think it's great. And I'm hoping against hope that they will bring it back next season. But if not, it was a great season of television. So there you go. They are the movies that I've been seeing, the short movie that I saw. It's a TV show that I've been watching. And what can I tell you about what I've been reading? I've been thrashing the new album by The Smile. I've just loved that so much. But I am up to the last graphic novel of Akira. That's right. A while back, I bought the box set of Akira, the 35th anniversary. Was it the 35th anniversary? Yeah, I think it was. And I've just been slowly going through that. I've really loved it. But it's funny, I know it's a graphic novel, but all the characters are constantly shouting at each other. So, you know, I'll read like 100, 150 pages in, you know, in a small window of time, and then I'll be like, fucking hell, I'm exhausted. It feels like they're just yelling at me the whole time. And then I go back to it. And so I'm up to the last graphic novel. I only have 300 odd pages to go, and I'm loving it, and it's great, and it's got this real momentum, actually. It's, you know, for those of you who have read it, you probably, you know, you would definitely be across this. But for those of you who haven't, it's got such a velocity to it that it's almost like you're turning the pages a bit too quickly, and it's like, whoa, 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 slow down. Slow down, mate. Slow it down, and there we go. That's a little bit better, you know, so I can really properly enjoy it and not read it too quickly that I can't, you know, I can't remember what I've read. You know, you can do that sometimes, right? So anyway, it's been great. If anyone has any other suggestions, because I'm reading Something is Killing the Children, and I've got the latest graphic novel for that, so I'll probably check that out after I finish Akira. But if there's any manga fans out there and you think that there's something that I might like to check out, feel free to make some suggestions. I'm always up for suggestions, and it's been nice to be digging into something that, you know, is lengthy, you know, like make a real commitment to something. So there you have it. That's where I'm at this point in time amongst everything else. God, it's just, I've been having to say to some friends, I've just been apologizing a lot, but it's just been really a lot going on, and not a lot of time to relax. And, you know, sometimes people very nicely say, oh, you're going to take time off. And it's like, yeah, but that's not how my industry works. My industry, when you don't work, you don't get paid. And so, you know, and when it all hits, it hits. So all of these things that I'm telling you about have been little oases for me, you know, moments to breathe, moments to replenish the intellect, the emotions, all of it. And that's what great art can do for you, for me, for everyone. So there you go. Okay, I should get going. Just as a heads up, over at Patreon, patreon.com/JustinHamilton, there's a new podcast going up just for Patreon subscribers. It is an old interview from the Can You Take This Photo Please days with Celia Pecola. Yeah, delightful Celia. She gave me a copy of her latest show on audio when she was doing a workshop, and I had a listen to it, and it's great. It's just great. Celia is by far one of the best comedians in the country, and her new show is like, it's a trial show, and it's already fantastic. Like, if this was the finished product, it would be better than 95% of the shows you'd see at the festival. And Celia's a perfectionist, and she'll make it even better than that. So I went back and I found this interview with Celia from 11 years ago, 12 years ago. Oh, God. Ah, can you believe it? So long ago. But that's going up on Patreon as well. So if you would like to subscribe to a tier that suits you, That is at patreon.com/JustinHamilton. Great little community over there. And we'd love to have your company. And yeah, by signing up, you can get access to all the old audio or previous podcasts that have gone up. I reckon there is about 50 bonus podcasts up there by now, along with a few other bits and pieces. So if you feel like you're not getting enough of me in your life, that's where you can find me. So there you go. All right, I'll be back on this feed soon. The plan is to try and do a post-Oscars podcast, but I'm also under the pump because we film the last episode of Dancing with the Stars on Tuesday, and I'm the script writer, so can't make any promises. Something will come out, but it might be Wednesday or Thursday, but I'll try to belt something out for you on the Monday. I hope you're well. I hope everyone is treating you properly. And hopefully we will all get to see each other again in the near future. Take care. And as always, thank you for listening to this podcast. It is thoroughly appreciated. Until then.
On a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.